Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I'd like to welcome you to the Socialist Insight. Today, we have a very exciting guest, Bob Maskey. He's a long-time friend of mine and also a fellow socialist. He recently wrote an article in regards to the difference between being a socialist and a liberal, and the article was entitled, Socialist or Liberal? And today we're going to be asking Bob some questions today that's going to be very insightful for our listeners so you can understand that there is a distinct difference between being a liberal or being a liberal or socialist. And Bob, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you for inviting me.
And Bob, what part of the country are you from?
Originally in Massachusetts, now in California.
Okay. How many years in California?
About 10.
And how many years would you say you've been a socialist?
Probably 30 to 40 years.
Okay, a lot longer than me. Almost twice as long.
Wow.
That's good.
Well,
very
I was young
and
I didn't quite always understand everything I understand today, but I considered myself a socialist back in high school.
Oh, that's great. And I think my whole life, Bob, I believe my whole life I've really been a socialist, the way I think and what I believe, and I really came to the realization that I was a socialist, I would say around 20 years ago. But anyway, to our topic today, Bob, as I mentioned, just recently you wrote this article, Socialist or Liberal, and Bob, what I want to ask, you know, starting our program today, what is the difference between a socialist and a liberal?
Well, I'd say the big difference is their views on capitalism. A liberal, believe it or not, a liberal can probably go their whole lives without even saying capitalism. They don't question the economic system. All they do is focus on the political system, which is missing half of the view. When even they accidentally talk about capitalism, they talk about reforming capitalism, fixing it, putting a smiley face on it, more regulation, which are not bad things, but a socialist wants to get rid of capitalism. That's the
right.
big difference. A liberal is in some respects supporting capitalism by offering regulations that make it sturdier and more long-lasting, and a socialist just wants to get rid of it.
Now, would you say that liberals believe that capitalism is a system that works for working people?
Could you say that again?
Would you say that liberals believe that capitalism is a system that works for working people? Because obviously, socialists, we don't believe it works for working people. We believe it only works for the rich capitalists on Wall Street. It works for the billionaires. But it's something that seems like it's acceptable for liberals. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard not to get confused between liberal and Democrat, which can often be used together. But let's go to, instead of saying liberal, let's say Democrat. The Democrats believe they can help everybody. That, you know, they can, you know, by promoting business, by helping corporate business, you create jobs, you inadvertently raise wages, and that they kind of just think that they can make everybody happy and give everybody opportunity. What they don't understand is the corruption of wealth, that once people get wealthy, they use their wealth to get more wealth for no other reason than to get more wealth.
More wealth. You know, very interesting. That's a good point. I was looking at a program, this is almost a year ago, and it was showing how the wealthy achieve their wealth in our society, and it was a story primarily if you weren't worth at least $500,000, you weren't even part of this program. And one of the persons that they had interviewed, he was saying, you know, he said, well, once you become so wealthy, it's not about the money, it's about keeping score. And, right. and I found that very interesting. It wasn't about wealth anymore because they were so wealthy, money didn't mean anything to them. It was about who was the wealthiest. And a lot of times you see people in our society, working people, they enjoy looking at the wealthiest in our society keep score, even though they're living in poverty. And that's something I found very interesting. One of the other things, Bob, and this is kind of a side note to our subject today, the same person was saying that if a person had two jets in his private garage, it was a matter of if, you know, another person could have three or four, and you're talking about jets that cost anywhere from $40 to $50 million apiece. Yeah. So, and that's the way the competition is. But the thing is, when you look at we as working people, we're living, many of us living in destitution, and socialists, they take a different approach about that. That too much greed actually corrupts. But Bob, back to our subject today. What motivated you to write this article?
Well, I go to a lot of chat rooms and comment sections on articles and things like that. And what used to happen, it seemed to me, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, is the right wing was confused about socialism. They, you know, purposely confused. You know, they wanted to attack it. I mean, I enjoy reading John Birch material. You know, I find it intriguing how they warp what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. But recently, it seems to me that even liberals are confused about what the whole thing is. And you find liberals who, again, will go their entire lives without even saying the word capitalism, calling themselves socialists. I don't have a big problem with that. I mean, I would rather they called themselves socialists than, you know, fascists. But, you know, we need to start clarifying the term, and we need to start clarifying the difference between a socialist and a liberal. And we have to point out that liberals are a part of the system, and socialists are shut out of the system.
Right. Well, Bob, when you look at both liberals and also socialists, what are some of the similarities that exist between both groups, between liberals and socialists? Because obviously there are some similarities in what their views are and what they support, such as on abortion, whether it's affirmative action, whether it's education. But what are some of the similarities that you see that exist? Because you say there are some major differences, but what are the similarities here?
Well, the similarities are the social issues. You know, we're all pro-choice, but, you know, socialists are typically more feminist-based than a liberal might be. So, you know, we agree on equality. We agree on civil rights. We agree on at least a socialist agrees on a safety net, at least temporarily, until we can create a just society. But we do agree with things like a minimum wage and you know, government-supported health care and public education. So we agree with all of those things. It's just the liberal looks at a lot of these things as far as the social safety net as the end, that, you know, okay, we've got this, we don't have to do anything more. The socialist looks at it as the beginning. You know, okay, we've got some health care, now we need more health care, we need better health care.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not so much a matter of similarities as much as it is of going beyond those similarities.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know the capitalists, they demonize socialists. Are the wealthy capitalists comfortable? Comfortable with the liberals in our society?
Well, in the article I wrote, I quote Noam Chomsky. He said, "The smart way to keep people passive and obedient is to strictly limit the spectrum of acceptable opinion, but allow very lively debate within that spectrum."
Right.
So when you look at liberal conservative, I mean, they go at each other, you know, tooth and nail. They're ready to take the baseball bats out. They argue about, you know, about every issue. There's always this impression that there's this huge battle going on between the two, and they're not always that far apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if they're still both supporting the economic system of capitalism, they aren't that far apart.
Right.
So you need the socialist in there to talk about ending capitalism and what the possible solutions
and that's why the socialist is not part of this discussion. I mean, they're not part of there at the table, whereas the liberal many times will be.
That's why the liberals are brought up as you know the icon of the left. That's what you know. This is as far left as you can go. They're the bookend.
Right.
There's nothing beyond that. It's
good
space.
Point. Space. Many Republicans have called President Obama a socialist, and we know that that's a joke. Would you say that President Obama is a liberal? Because many times we have heard that people say, well, that he is a liberal, but we have also heard that he's a socialist, and you and myself being a socialist and anyone that's a true socialist know that that's completely false. But would you say that President Obama is a liberal?
I think a lot of liberals are having big problems with Obama. Just with what he did yesterday, nominating a Walmart executive to his cabinet, I mean, that's a slap to his most energetic union base, which is going after Walmart and has been going after Walmart for quite a while and correctly going after Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, so there's a lot of liberals out there who do not like Obama and do not like what he is doing. Is he a liberal? No. I think pointing a Walmart executive and as you mentioned before, we got on the Monsanto as a board member. This proves he's a pro corporate centrist, if not right of center. But
right.
And this is a big important but. We have to be really careful that we don't confuse people with the social issues. Because Obama's
mm-hmm.
work for the gay community, for example, has been exemplary. I mean, he's probably
right.
done more than I even thought he possibly could have done.
Mm-hmm.
And if we ignore that, if we don't give him some kudos on things like that, we risk alienating the people
but
he has
advocated
doesn't
mean
for.
That we. That doesn't mean that we can actually label him as a socialist, but we
no,
could easily
no.
label him as a liberal, correct?
Right, right.
Right.
So he's a liberal on social issues or some social issues. You know, I mean, his support for women's rights has not been that bad. But, you know, he's not a socialist. And, again, on economic issues, I don't even think liberals accept him. And, you know, as far as war, I mean, which is, you know, used to be, you know, when there was a Republican president, liberals used to be against war. A lot of them are starting to question his drone strikes. So,
looking beyond just Obama, I mean, let's look at the party that he represents, the Democratic Party, because you say, well, he could be looked at as a liberal in regards to many of those social issues. Would you say the Democratic Party is a party of liberals?
The grassroots member, the person who actually thought about, you know, what party he or she was going to register as, is a liberal. The leadership
mm-hmm.
is not. Absolutely not. I mean, the Rahm Emanuels, the Obamas, the Clintons, these are not liberal people. These are pro-corporate centrists at the to be nice about it.
Mm-hmm.
They do not to see this in action. What you should do what people should do is do a search for the Democratic convention when Mayor Villagrosa of Los Angeles was speaking about God and then about Israel. And he brought up these two issues. And he was trying to ram something through the Democrats who were there. And the Democrats from the floor were shouting them down, saying, no, we don't want to vote the way you're making us vote. And he just ignored them.
Mm-hmm.
So the Democratic leadership is out of touch with their people. But at the same time, the Republicans are so wacky, so scary, that a lot of liberals don't see any other option anymore.
Now, why would you say they are out of touch with the people? Because what I had just recently, we had Alan Mackey, he was on our program, and one of the things that we brought up in the conversation, you say the Democrats are out of touch, but we say that I believe that their constituents for the Democrats are the people on Wall Street. Their constituents are not the people in the communities and working people.
Right. Yep.
I mean, that's who they represent.
But the
whether
difference
Democrat or Republican, that's who they represent.
But the difference is a Republican represents, let's call them the wealthy, represents the wealthy and, you know, damn beat everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Democrats actually believe that by supporting the wealthy, they support everybody. I think it's a small
mm-hmm.
distinction. It doesn't have a lot to do with the socialists. The socialists, you know, would just go crazy debating the point.
but
it is a point. The average Democrat, the average liberal, I don't have a lot of animosity for.
Okay.
As opposed to the Democratic leadership, I mean, which has corrupted, you know, helped to corrupt the whole system, so that everything is getting worse instead of better.
Mm-hmm. You brought up a very interesting point when you were talking about people that are members of the party and people that are part of the leadership of the party. But what is the difference between someone that is a member of the Democratic Party and someone who is registered with the Democratic Party?
Well, I mean,
in your opinion.
Well, people register for a party for all kinds of different reasons, for one thing. I mean, I know
right.
progressive people who registered as you know, out of high school, who are now, you know, 20 years older, who are registered Republican, who are embarrassed
mm-hmm.
about it. So a lot of people
right.
register Democrat or Republican for no other reason than that's what they thought they were supposed to register as. You know, and there's actually, I know of a few socialists out there that are still registered Republican. I don't know why, but, you know, they just haven't changed it. But maybe you could help clarify
and
the difference between.
No, you're right, because as I remember when I first got registered, when I first registered back in the 70s, when I was talking to my parents about it, well, you got to register Democrat, you know, like that
right.
was the only thing to register, spot on the petition for the voter registration card that I could register for. And obviously, I didn't want to vote Republican because, you know, I had never heard in my life anything good about the Republican Party, especially being part of the black community. But when you look at the difference between the two, when you look at the membership within of a party, such as you have the Democratic Party, I'm with the Socialist Party USA, you have other parties that I've run with in the past, the Peace and Freedom Party, but they have like central committees, county on the county level, the state level, and also with the Democrats and Republicans, they have national committees. And these people, they run for those positions as committee members, central committee members, whether it's on the local level or state central committee members, and then they represent the party even at a national level. When a person becomes a registered with a party, as I just mentioned, sometimes you can be right out of high school and, you know, well, my parents, they're registered with the Democrats or they're with the Republicans or whatever party that they're registered with, and then you just go and fill out a voter registration card, and then you register. So
right.
that's what I see as a difference myself. But as far as many times people don't even understand what those parties even represent, whether it's the Democrats or Republicans or even some socialist organizations. But what they do is they look at the leadership and they also look at what is being done by those organizations when they make their selection. When you look at Democrats, and just look at the average person that register with the Democratic Party or register with any political party. Well, let's be more specific with just the Democratic Party. Would you say the millions of Americans that are registered with the Democratic Party here in this country, would many of them consider themselves liberal today? Because very often you hear people when they refer to when you start talking about issues, right away they'll hit you with that, you're just a liberal or you're a Democrat. Right away it's almost like they're synonymous with each other.
Right.
But most people that are actually registered with the party, the Democratic Party, would you say they consider themselves liberals?
Well, this is, you know, again, this is why I felt a need to write this article, because we have to define the terms, and I wanted to define socialist, but, you know, also have to define liberal. And
right.
There's a difference between taking the issues and saying, how do you want to fix these issues, and finding out that people are very liberal or very socialist, actually, because when you do that, when you take away the name tags and you say, should we have free education? Should we have, you know, free medical care? Should we take care of people who are poor? You know, people are far more to the left than the media or the politicians want us to recognize. But that name, liberal, I don't know if people are actually embracing it. They're starting to embrace it again, but the liberals allowed that word to be so abused by the right wing that for many years they ran away from the liberal tag. They wouldn't use the word liberal themselves. Even Hillary Clinton started calling herself a progressive, which is
mm-hmm.
the time I stopped calling
right.
myself a progressive. So, I mean, you know, to answer your question, I think I would have to, you know what you mean by liberal, and you know I don't think
well,
we can
very,
come
very
up with
often
that right
you
now.
See, you, very often you see someone, they consider themselves a liberal, and what I'm seeing is many of these same people that are registered with the party, they believe in many things that the Democratic Party supports, whether it's on education, energy, affirmative action, the death penalty. They support those things. But you ask a person that's a socialist, even though he's registered with the Democratic Party just for voting purposes, but if you ask them, if you ask a person that is a socialist, are they a Democrat, they would say, no, I'm a socialist. I'm only registered with the party. Whereas a person can still be registered with the Democratic Party, and they also are liberal. They say, well, I'm a liberal Democrat. Or, you know, I register and I support the Democratic Party, even though I'm a liberal. But there's always that distinction when you ask most socialists you ask someone that's registered with the Democratic Party and they're not, they're socialists, they'll let you know right up front, no, I'm a socialist. I only vote on that party line. So that's what I was referring to with that question. Moving on in our questions here, why do so many liberals distance themselves from being called a socialist, even when many of them share many of the same common concerns and beliefs? Bob?
Just like the word liberal has been dragged around, socialist has been dragged around. I think they dragged it around so much that there's nothing left they can do to the word. So it's mm-hmm. it's almost hit the stone wall, and it's coming back into fashion. So some liberals are calling themselves socialists, almost as a shock value, though. They don't understand the difference. The difference being, again, the capitalist system, whether you, in the end, support the continuation of a system for profit, or if you're a socialist who is against that type of a system and more for an equitable system. It doesn't matter always if they refer to themselves as socialists if they don't understand the word.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like if you call yourself a liberal and don't understand the word, and you know, vote Republican, and you know, it doesn't matter as much. Again, we have to start defining the term and what the terms mean.
Bob, why is socialism looked at by so many as a bad word, and being a liberal is accepted in this capitalist society? Why would you say?
Well, I think for one thing, you know, it goes back. People are also not only confused about socialist and liberal; they're also confused about socialist and the systems that were in place in the Soviet Union, and
mm-hmm.
it's been a very effective effort by the right to connect socialists like myself to the Soviet Union system. When
mm-hmm.
when actually the Soviet Union system, we were victims too. We were not treated very well in that system.
They
came after us pretty energetically. But that's all ignored. You know, that's not a part of the discussion. So they've been able to not only manipulate the terms, they've been able to manipulate history. They've been able to manipulate the politics. That's one of the benefits of being wealthy and having nothing better to do with your money.
Socialists are an inherent enemy are inherent enemies of the capitalist system. Would you say liberals are a benefit in a capitalist system?
No. I mean, if there weren't liberals,
almost like that escape valve.
Right, exactly. I was going to call them a siphon, but I'll take the escape
valve.
Okay. You know, if liberals didn't exist, the capitalists would have to create them. They need
mm-hmm.
that bookend on the other end of it.
So they need
What's that?
No, I say you say they need that.
Yeah, they need that. No matter where the bookend is, they need the bookend. And, you know, we've been seeing over the last, surprising even to me, over the last 10 years or so, how far to the right, I mean, it's even beyond the center sometimes now, that they've moved that liberal bookend. I
mm-hmm.
mean, you know, we no longer talk about the things we were talking about 20 years ago. Now we,
uh-huh.
you know, now we talk about, you know, even a smaller range between a, you know, conservative Republican and a conservative Democrat.
In your article, what did you mean when you said saving capitalism from itself?
Well, I didn't. Obviously, I didn't come up with that term. That
right.
term's been around
but,
for quite
a
while.
What does that mean? What does it mean? Saving
that was,
capitalism. From itself.
Yeah, I'm not the I know a little bit about a lot, so I'm not an expert on anything. But as
right.
far as I understand it,
you sound like me.
I'm not as handsome though, Stuart.
Very flattering.
But the term was used to describe what FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, did to get us out of the Great Depression. He installed a lot of socialist programs to save capitalism. I think at the time a lot of people thought that he was actually embracing socialism and we were moving down a socialist path. I mean, some of the things he did back just, you know, what was it, 80 years ago, some of those
mm-hmm.
things are just incredible. He was paying artists. He was paying writers. He was paying people to go out and rescue the environment. They were picking litter. They were out in the forest cleaning up. You know, the directions he was installing things like Social Security and you know, increasing the graduated income tax and taxing the wealthy. He was doing all these incredible things back then to get us out of that depression. But then over the generations, over the years, they've taken almost all that back and stopped it all. So
well,
looking
you know,
in hindsight,
it
we look at it as
yeah.
saving capitalism from itself. It was
right.
going to collapse. It was too greedy, and he installed all these programs that ended up being short-term.
Right, to get capitalism back on track.
Right.
But, you know,
right.
one of the things I find very interesting, Bob, is that back then, they were calling FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, they were calling him a socialist,
yeah.
like they call Obama a socialist. Why was it accepted by many of the socialists at the time when they call him a socialist, and today we say Obama, he's not a socialist, which you and I, we don't
right.
acknowledge him as being a socialist, but why was that accepted back in the 30s?
You
in
know,
your opinion.
It's my opinion, and I'm not the expert, and I honestly, looking back at what I know, I can't tell where FDR really was. If you listen to some of his speeches, when he's talking about bankers and stuff like that, he sounds a lot more like Hugo Chavez than he does Bernie Sanders.
Right.
You know, FDR, I mean, I don't know, maybe it was all, you know, bells and whistles, and he didn't really mean any of it, but he sounded very progressive, very socialist. And again, the programs he
yeah,
put in
society, they were calling him a socialist at the time.
Yeah,
but one
and,
of the
I mean,
what I see, Bob, is that the country was in dire straits. They were in a major depression. Of course, the depression we have today is much more severe than that. But the thing is, people needed jobs, they needed food, they needed housing, clothing, and it was a period of desperation. And here they came up with these socialist programs, say, here, we're going to put you to work. You know, and Obama said, we're going to put you to work with shovel-ready jobs.
Yeah.
It was a lie. Even Obama came and said, well, they weren't really quite shovel-ready. You know, we're going to create jobs where we're going to be repairing our infrastructure. That didn't happen. So he was making promises and FDR was producing, came up with Social Security. People say, now we can look forward to the future. These are programs that he was installing. Now the only thing that we hear coming from this administration and out of Washington, they're just talking about austerity and how they're going to send the nation further into debt. But that's a major difference that I can see myself.
Well,
when
you came
FDR.
Up with you mentioned something really important in that, you know, what working people wanted during the Great Depression. They wanted jobs, they wanted homes, they wanted enough food on the table. Working people aren't greedy.
Right.
Working people just want some basics. They want their kids to be happy and healthy. They want to be able to be taken care of when they're sick. They want some food. They want a couple of weeks vacation here and there. They want a job they like.
Exactly.
That's what working
people. That's all they want.
They're not greedy. And what happened, I think, after FDR's term, and again, why we can't, I don't think I can look back and say FDR was this or FDR was that, the working class kind of dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They got paid off. They got bought off with good jobs, you know, growing unions, you know, a robust economy in the 50s and going into the 60s. You know, they let all the New Deal just slip back away.
Right.
You know,
the multi-capitalists, what they did is they looked over on that side of the equation and they said, these people, they're starting to do, they're doing quite well. And we understand when we look at labor and we look at profits in corporate America, it's all about labor. And, in other words, if we need to increase our profits, how many thousands of workers do we need to lay off? When they look at net profits, do we need to start shipping the jobs overseas? Whereas during the Depression, FDR is saying, we're going to do something for the working person right now because the wealthy capitalists have enough to go around. But what they don't want to do, they don't want to share that. As you mentioned earlier, Bob, it's all about greed.
Yep.
What can we
have
for
ourselves? And I don't think working people... I don't think a lot of working
FDR,
people.
And FDR, what he was saying is, we need to start sharing this wealth. We need to create jobs right here, right now. And that's what he was doing. That's not what we see now because it's always siphoned off by the wealthiest in our society today.
I think also working people judge wealthy people by their own feelings. And since working people aren't greedy, they don't understand the greed of the wealthy. They don't understand how greedy they are and how psychotic they are. I mean, these wealthy people, they are. They are on the process of destroying our planet. You don't have to watch the Weather Channel too long to not understand that. And they're in the process of destroying the planet just so they can afford another $40 or $50 million jet.
Good point.
And I think that is psychotic.
Right. And when you look at the wealthiest in our society, I mean, you look at over the last decade of how many, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of billionaires that have been created here in this country, not to mention worldwide. We're in a global economic depression, and the disparity of wealth, working people can't understand that why are we in this condition today is because of the disparity of wealth. So this is something, everything comes down to when we look at the ills in society, whether it was back in the 30s or whether we look at it now, it all comes from greed. And it seems that liberals, they're willing to settle for just give us, you know, just pacify us for right now, whereas socialists are looking at more the long term. In other words, we need to be able to be in control of the means and production in our society rather than having, you know, the wealthy few to control the resources in our society.
And I think that's where FDR went wrong. I mean, if I had to point out something that FDR did wrong, he didn't support, or not that I know of, but he didn't support cooperatives. He didn't nationalize the energy industry. He didn't nationalize the banks. He put more regulations on. That was the kind of a compromise they all agreed on. We'll put more regulation on you. We'll do this and that. You know, but regulation only cuts it for so long because as soon as you put a regulation in, the wealthy and their corporations try to get rid of it.
But, you know, Bob, one of the things I see is if we look at the transition of what happened under the Roosevelt administration, at the time, they had a 25% recovery from the Depression before World War II, before 1939. And what happened is that when war started, now that's when the transition started going back to how can we take the wealthy, take care of the wealthy in our society. Because when you can consider the accumulation of wealth, more wealth is created during a period of war than at any other point in our society. And then if you look at the last 4 to 5 years of the Roosevelt administration, many of these programs that were created, all of a sudden we start seeing that transition back where it was giving all of this wealth that was being created right back to the wealthy few in our society. That's what I see.
I'd agree with that, yes. Yep.
Now, back to, I just want to explore this a little bit more about Franklin Roosevelt because, even though people were calling him a socialist at the time, was Franklin Roosevelt, would you say that he was a liberal?
I think he's a classic liberal. And again, I find it hard to judge him. I mean, because he was a wealthy person. He inherited great wealth. And he came in as pretty conservative, as I understand it. When he was first elected, he was somewhat conservative, and he grew. He changed. He evolved into accepting these socialist inspired programs to save the country from the economic collapse. So I don't want to judge him too much, other than to say he didn't take that step of actually getting the means of production into the hands of working people. So in the end his challenge against capitalism was was relatively short lived.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what you mentioned also in this article and what was actually said in the other before you wrote the article, I believe he was one that came in at the right time to save capitalism from itself. They needed him at that time. Yep. In other words, he became a savior, even though he was a liberal. He became a savior for capitalism. Was it for working people? No. Ultimately, it was going to be to save capitalism for the future benefits of the wealthy few in our society. That's what I see.
Well, I think a good question on that line is, why didn't Obama do some of those same things? That's what I would like to know. I mean, why didn't Obama, do those job programs that he promised? And why did he not do direct government hiring? He never really proposed the direct government hiring. He always proposed going through contractors, which would always, increase the profits for a certain class of people. But Obama did not come in and start doing these proven things. I mean, even Paul Krugman, a Nobel Prize winning economist who's a liberal, criticizes Obama all the time. As far as not doing enough to get us out of this recession, why didn't he do it when it's the clear thing you had to do was massive government spending on government jobs? That's a rhetorical question. I don't know.
I think it's a good question, but I think the difference is when you look at the 30s and you look at what took place here and now, it was the Feds. The Feds back then, they were dumping just enough into our economy just to create minimum jobs. And what the Feds did here in 2008, they say, we have an economic global crisis. And they started pumping trillions of dollars into this economy, and they're doing it today. So even though Obama made those promises initially, I mean, look at right now, the Feds are dumping $40 billion a month into this economy just to help to sustain it. We had Obama, he received $787 billion at the beginning of his term.
Right.
He started out with $350 billion that came from the Bush administration. So the Feds, the difference is between the 30s and now, they have been pumping trillions of dollars into this economy just to sustain it. Only thing they're doing now, Bob, as opposed to the 30s, they're just printing money. They're just printing money.
Yeah. And I think it's also, where did the money go? I mean, with FDR,
the
money went to paychecks.
Where's the money going?
Right. The money nowadays, the money is going towards the wealthy, and hopefully it'll trickle all down. Back during FDR's days, it went to paychecks. It went to
people
to go out and clean up the forests, you know?
And they realized, well, we did it wrong the first time. What we did is we created jobs. Now what we're going to do is we're going to do it right this time. We're going to create jobs on Wall Street for the rich, wealthy CEOs and for the executives and also for the investors. So they've done it completely different, whereas the money went to help to build our economy and our society then. Now it's just gone to build the richest in our society. Big difference.
Yep.
Was FDR, was Roosevelt, would you say he was for the working class?
Well, I think the working class
was
in rebellion.
Or was he just a functionary for the capitalists?
Yeah, I think the working class was in rebellion. I think they were ready to pick up their baseball bats and go after things. And Roosevelt, you know, because you know, a lot of people get hurt, and when that happens, he wanted to save himself. Never mind capitalism. So he'll give them money. You know, you get out there and do some work, and we'll give you a paycheck. You know, we'll take care of your parents. We'll take your son, and we'll put him in a camp, and he'll go build bridges. You know, footbridges in our national parks, and we'll feed him, and we'll give him a little bit of money he can send home. And you know, there you go. Now, don't kill me.
but I'm gonna ask you. I'm gonna throw the same question at you. Why didn't Obama do this?
Because Obama's not a liberal. Because Obama's not a socialist. He's not a liberal. He's pro-corporate.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is exactly. What's that?
I say good point.
Yeah.
No, he works for Wall Street. And people mentioned. You know,
why doesn't he at least
do
what
Walmart
Krugman is saying?
A few minutes ago, the Walmart executive.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
When we look at the New Deal, and there's a lot of talk about the New Deal, how it was, socialist in nature. But would you say the New Deal was socialist, or would you say it was liberal, or none of the above?
I think it's to the extreme end of liberal. But again, without promoting the cooperatives, without promoting worker control, with promoting unions, which is a form of economic democracy, but then trying to focus them more on wages than on control, without taking that extra step, you're not a socialist, or you're not actually moving in a solid socialist direction. You know, even if you don't do all those things, you have to be proposing them. You know, it would have been a prime time to nationalize the banking system. And
mm-hmm.
you know, we have one nationalized state bank in this country. I think it's North Dakota. That's the only state that didn't have this massive economic meltdown. Nationalizing the energy industry would have been a no-brainer. You know, I mean, especially when we look at it now, how we're being, you know, pretty much, you know, taken advantage of by the oil companies. I mean, they're ruining the environment. They're charging us too much money. We're not getting the alternate energy that we should be getting. It just makes no sense.
Bob, I just want to mention once again to our listeners, we have Bob Maskey. He's a long-time friend of mine and also a long-time socialist for close to 40 years. And today we're discussing an article that he wrote recently. It's Socialist or Liberal? And Bob, he's discussing his article and also what the difference is. The difference of being a socialist and a liberal. Bob, I'm just going to take just a few seconds. I want you to just mention to our listeners how they can be able to go online and read your entire article. How would they be able to find this article?
I posted the article at readersupportednews.org. The link is kind of long, but I think if you search the site for my name, Maskey, M-A-S-C-H-I, you should be able to come across all my articles. I have a couple on libertarianism and Obama, a few others. I believe, Stuart, you're going to post a link on your Facebook page.
Yes,
so
I will.
So I'll send that link off to you, and after this program is over, you can post that. And that's how they can read it.
And how would our listeners be able to reach you, Bob?
Probably through my Facebook page.
Your Facebook.
Yeah.
So if you can spell your name again so they can be able to link up with that.
Sure. Bob, B-O-B, Maskey, M-A-S-C-H-I.
Thank you very much, Bob. And we're just going to go and continue with our questions for this program today. The New Deal that FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, introduced in the 30s Was that a good step to usher in a socialist economy, in your opinion, Bob?
You know, aside from just rebuilding after a collapse, I don't know how else you would do it. I guess that's where my opinion ends. I mean, if put yourself in that place, if you were president, you actually got closer to that, Stuart, than I did, because you ran. I didn't. But what would you have done if you had gotten in there? I assume a lot of the same things that FDR had done. I mean, you know,
right.
Maybe better, maybe, you know, maybe more tactfully. Why don't you tell me how you would have done
it? If you really wanted to do something and move it toward a socialist society, he would have built on his successes and those programs. Obviously, FDR, he was really working for the wealthy few. He was working for the people that had installed him into that position. So subsequently, even though he started or initiated those programs to create many jobs and many programs that benefited was a benefit to working people, ultimately, he had to answer to his bosses. Myself, they are not my bosses, and obviously I didn't get elected.
Yes.
So they're going to install, ultimately, the person that's elected president. It will be the person that will function, will be a functionary for the wealthy people, the wealthy corporations that put them in that position. But FDR, he was just doing his job. He was basically a high position CEO for the Wall Street executives and also
right.
the banks that he represented. Would you say that now when we look at, you know, the programs that he brought in, would you say that any of those programs, I mean, if we were to have some of the work programs they had back in the 30s, would those be practical measures that Obama could do today?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, they're even more critical than they were back then. Most of our most of our bridges in this country were built back then. They were built during the Great
right.
Depression. They're falling apart. You know, I mean, we're not rebuilding them. I don't exactly know what the capitalists are thinking. They're all thinking, I guess, they're going to move to China, which is, you know, modernizing faster than we ever will.
Right.
So I don't know what they're thinking, what they're planning, why they aren't taking advantage of this. Like I pointed out before, our environment is a mess. I mean, we should be out there, you know, with spoons and shovels, doing whatever we can to slow down, if not stop, the damage that's being done to our environment. There's so much to do, and again, there's that liberal bookend. We can only go so far. We can only talk about so many things. We can't talk about, you know, putting everybody to work, saving the environment. I mean, they'd look at you like you were crazy if you said something
right.
like that now, right?
Right, exactly. Socialists and most liberals believe in a minimum wage. Bob, do you believe a minimum wage? And do you believe in a minimum wage, first of all? And what should be the standard to determine a minimum wage?
I support a minimum wage, absolutely, but I don't like getting involved in the Democrat-Republican debate about it.
Right.
does it hurt the economy? Does it help the economy? You know, how much should it be? I'd rather broaden it out. I'd rather talk about, you know, a guaranteed minimum income. I'd rather talk
because both socialists and liberals that subject always come up. Minimum wage, and then, you know, usually the debate goes to how much should it be. Like when I was running for lieutenant governor in 2006. The minimum wage that we support is $15 per hour. And then once I was on the ballot, they said, well, what we'll do is we'll say that we want to support a minimum wage at $10 an hour. I thought we should have stated $15 an hour. But whether you look at Democrat or Republican, I mean, whether you – Democrat or Republican, liberal or socialist, that always comes up in the debate as far as a minimum wage.
Yeah. Well, I would support a high minimum wage. I mean, you know, but I mean, if our minimum wage had kept pace, I can't remember the exact numbers, but if they had kept pace over the last 30 years, it would be around $20 an hour,
I guess,
right now.
Yeah, exactly.
It would
be over $20.
You know? But, you know, let's also talk about the maximum income.
Right.
That's the one I want to talk about, which is
yeah,
really,
let's talk
when
about
you think
that.
About
I want
it,
to hear that.
Yeah, people get scared when you say maximizing. Oh, that's going to depress capital. That's going to depress investment. That's going to, you know what? That's really just a progressive income tax. That's really all that is. You know, and that's, we already have that, and we've had that, and they want to get rid of that now, and they're trying to impose this flat tax. But we have a progressive income tax. We had a huge I think the top rate was over, you know, like 92% back during FDR's time. I mean, you know, when you reached a certain income level, they took almost all your money. And that's what I'd like to see. I would like to see,
you can make as much
money as you want. You can, you know, as a start to get rid of the wealth accumulation, it would be a nice start.
Right. A few months ago, I was on the John Stossel program, and I had mentioned that I believe that we should have some type of cap on, you know, for the wealthiest in our society. And, I was met with all kinds of boos from the – of course, you had to consider the audience that was there. They were mostly Republicans. Many socialists believe in a basic income guarantee. I'm with the Socialist Party USA, Freedom Socialist Party. Many other socialist organizations believe in a basic income guarantee. Why do we need a basic income? Well, first of all, I'm assuming that you also support that. But why do we need a basic income today? And is it supported by many liberals?
I absolutely agree with that. And to be, I think, I'm not absolutely sure on this, but I think it was actually proposed by Martin Luther King. Which,
yeah, he
you
did.
Know, there's this big effort to go out and brand Martin Luther King as a Republican conservative, which he was not. He was a socialist.
Yeah, would you believe it was also supported by Richard Nixon?
Really?
Yes, Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, and would you believe, I mean, Richard Nixon was talking about that, and it passed the House, and it was shot down in the Senate.
No kidding. Wow. Well, when we talk about a basic guaranteed income of some sort, we should include things like Social Security, like free health care, like free education through college. I mean, whether you give people money so that they can go out and afford their health care or whether you just give them the free health care, I don't see a big distinction. So I support that basic income, but also I support all the social programs, the Medicaid, the Medicare, the health care, the free education through college, all those other things that also benefit working people.
Is Obamacare a socialist program?
No.
A liberal program or a program that will only, you know, offer a greater benefit to the health and pharmaceutical industry. What is your opinion on that?
I think Obamacare, like most people on the left, I kind of turned my back on Obamacare when he dropped without an argument the public option.
Mm-hmm.
I think the public option was the way to go. I think it might have actually worked. I think it might have actually crushed the insurance companies eventually. I'm pretty sure it would have crushed them, which is why they didn't even propose it, why they only used it as a little threat if you don't go along, you know, to threatening the Republicans, if you don't go along with this, then we'll try to push through the public option. In the end, the way it turned out, I think it was just there's some good, really good things in there. We can't ignore the good things in there.
Right.
But basically, it was a giveaway to the pharmaceutical industry, a giveaway to the hospitals.
You know, the reason why I asked you that, because very often when I mention my opposition to Obamacare, even to socialists, I come under attack every time. I mean, they don't even want me touching that subject. Don't talk about Obamacare. It's almost like it's sacred. And it's relevant for the discussion because, as you mentioned, the public option should have never been taken off the table. I think if the public option had been there, then it would have made Obamacare something that would have been workable for working people as opposed to being workable only for the big pharmaceutical and health maintenance organizations. I as I mentioned, I have found, and I'm just going to throw that same question at you, I have found that Obamacare has been supported by both liberals and socialists. In your opinion, why do you think that they do support that?
I must run – I obviously run around a different crowd than you do. Because I have not met a socialist
who probably do.
I haven't met a socialist who supports Obamacare.
I've
met many liberals and progressives who do, and it's almost it's almost like they play the game. You know, they're caught up in who's going to win the election and can we get this through, and, you know, you're rolling the dice. It's almost like a game to them sometimes, you know, and we got this through. We're not going to let you put it down because we got this through and this was a victory, and that's all there is to it. We don't want to talk about it anymore.
You know, very interesting. I was a state organizer for the Socialist Party USA, and I lost several people that had joined and had become members of the Socialist Party USA because they knew by looking at over the internet that I was in opposition to Obamacare. And,
really?
And several of them just came right on and say, you know, due to your opposition to Obamacare, I want to discontinue my affiliation with the party. And, you know, and I mean, it was just my opinion that,
really,
you know, I was opposed to it. And they still discontinued their membership with the party. I only have probably around another 3 minutes, and then we're going to close this up. And I want to also have you to come in again, Bob, where you can be able to just give some closing statements, how people can read this article again. Is capitalism a threat to socialists and liberals?
It could go both ways. I get very worried and concerned about the teabagger groups, for example, which are, you know, supporting capitalism without question, and them arming themselves. I get very worried about that. I assume you weren't really asking me if I felt physically threatened. But
no, not physically. I mean, and what I'm saying is, because obviously when you look at socialists and what we believe in, we see, you know, whether we want to get out and support Occupy Wall Street, whether we want to be, whether we want to participate in rallies or demonstrations or getting permits so we can be able to express our viewpoints, we're the first ones to be shot down, as opposed to liberals. They're not. So apparently it's like you're a threat where roadblocks are always being created. So what I'm saying, are we a threat where the capitalists realize that this is something that needs to be contained?
I don't know if it's that so much, or are they just – they want their opposing viewpoint to be manageable. They want it to be controlled. They understand where the liberal is going to come from and what the liberal is going to say and what the liberal is going to talk about. They don't understand what crazy thing we're going to say, how much sense we're going to make, and how many people are going to, you know, we're going to convince if they give
good
us
point.
That platform, you know?
Right. Last question I have, and then we're going to get into where how people can reach you. After the great economic collapse, which happened in 2008, and of course it was the greatest collapse since the Great Depression, why are socialists being left out of the debate? And some liberals are still being, you know, where they're still at the table, where they're able to participate in forums and be able to even present their views on the corporate media. But why are socialists, why are we being left out?
I think it's a general problem with everything progressive left-wing, such as our unions being weakened. We've, as you know, historically, we've always been hammered down by the wealthy. I mean, if not physically attacked, we are, you know, put in jail, or there's all kinds of things that happen to socialists that haven't kept us from speaking out, but have kept us from convincing a lot of people that this is the way to go. So are they threatened by it? I think they see threats everywhere, and they prefer the liberal threat than the socialist threat.
Well, Bob, once again, I want to thank you for joining the program. Could you just mention that website where people can go and read this article, Socialist or Liberal?
That would be readersupportednews.org, O-R-G. And you can check out
Stewart's
page.
Once again, thank you for – once again, thanks for joining the program. I look forward to having you back on our program again in the future. And again, we want to thank Ruth Ann for always supporting us with this program. Thanks again, and we look forward to having you back on next week on The Socialist Insight. Have a good day.
Thanks.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Ruth Ann.